tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Well, there's not much good news in the headlines of today, but I'll read a few of them quickly before coming to the good news anyhow. Here's one: crime increases faster than size of police force. And incidentally, these were all taken from very recent newspapers. I'm reading the type that is clipped to a page right before me. Giveaway food is giving out and still the world hungers. Another one shows wanted by 1980, food for 1 billion hungry mouths. The headline, food surplus soon will be a thing of the past. Another headline, state arrest trial, sharp rise in crime within past decade. Another one, 2 million refugees, millions flee upheavals of black Africa. World conditions found unsettled at New Year, said another. Ask rebuilding of cities, cost $50 billion, said another one. 20% admit to cheating as freshmen, says another one. Wherever you look, the war in Vietnam, shooting, killing in Syria and Israel, war in Yemen, massacres in the Congo, horrible weather, sensational trials uncovering government intrigue and chicanery, murders, accidents, sickness, disease, unbelievable pollution. And I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings in the Chamber of Commerce, but I could be hacking and wheezing right now when I take a look outside. There's an incredible big black choking pall of smoke hanging over Los Angeles as I talk. And it makes your lungs ache, and it smarts your eyes, and it makes everybody a little bit unhappy. And a lot of drivers sometimes pull over to the side just to wipe their eyes from it. Now, you know, we can joke and talk about it and sort of ignore it and go our way, but it's not going to go away by us joking and talking about it. And these are the headlines that we are reading. These are the conditions of our age today. And you're reading of it, you're experiencing it, you're living it. But where's the good news? It's hard to come by, except maybe on the sports page of your newspaper where your favorite team in one of the big, commercialized, professional sports of this era of ours may have happened to have won for a change. That doesn't mean any more to you than it may 50 million other people, but it's something to at least rejoice in momentarily. Or maybe your favorite comic strip character won the girl, whipped the villain, or maybe even escaped Sadie Hawkins Day, and so temporarily people are happy. Or are they? We go to the job, we go down the freeway, we go out to the fields, we go to the village, we go shopping, and we see around us this world again, regardless as to how temporarily we feel we may escape. But how would you like for a change to read some of these headlines? Crime dropped 50% during 1976. Let's pick a year out of the hat. Headed still lower. How about this one? Crime drops another 50% in 1977. And if you could believe 3 or 4 more years and there would be no crime at all, how about this one? No wars during last decade. All former soldiers, sailors, marines, civil defense workers being rapidly assimilated into food production and new industries. How about reading a headline about disease epidemics disappearing? How millions are in better health than ever before. And how would you like to read about this one? I think doctors would rejoice about this one, especially because, of course, many of these men in white are supposedly laboring to find cures for the illnesses of mankind, which presumes to say that, paradoxically, here are technical and skilled people who are laboring to put themselves out of a job. So it would say something like this, if you could read this fantastic headline, thousands of hospital properties up for sale. Sensational decline in sickness and disease releases increasing hundreds of thousands of doctors, nurses, attendants, and staff personnel for much happier and more useful occupations. Wouldn't that be a terrific headline to read? Especially for all of us with friends, neighbors, and relatives in hospitals. How about this one? Rapid increase in food production. Now, I'm reading these out of a book. I'm reading these headlines out of a booklet before me, which is a unique booklet that tells you how these headlines are going to be possible, believe it or not. A master plan mapping the course of humankind into the next few decades, showing you how we will achieve peace because we must achieve peace for mankind to survive. And showing you how there is a great master plan for achieving, believe it or not, utopia. It will have to be utopia or we perish. That's the place to which we have come in world conditions today. Now, I'm not trying to sell magazines for anybody, but there's an article in a recent number of True magazine that talks about walking out into the year 2000 and trying to imagine what kind of a world it would be. And you know, it's really horrifying when you see if you took today's conditions and you tried to walk out into the future with them and to imagine a family living a daily life in the year 2000. That's 33 short years away, my friend. The picture was that the boy was clamoring to go to the zoo to see a collie. Because long since, even in the United States, all domestic pets had first been eaten and then banned because they were eating too much foodstuffs themselves, and the only place where a child could see a dog or a cat anymore was in a zoo. It was talking about how up until the 1970s or 80s, the United States still felt that it could ship food first to this country and then the other, but finally it got so fantastic that the government had to ban it and start a new policy, American food for Americans only, and how that had resulted in immediate boycott from all other nations shipping foods here, and how this one little boy hadn't eaten a banana, and here he was, age 8. He'd never tasted a banana in his entire life, and how Central and South American countries were upset, and how Mexican people had raided Texas villages for food, and how people were eating at least once a day as a staple in their diet algae. Algae soup, algae fried, algae broiled, baked, and you name it, algae taken from the sea to stave off starvation and famine. It's a sort of a petrifying article, and all it's doing is to show you how in one country alone, where United States population will almost double today's in just about 30 short years, the fantastic conditions that would occur even if we could stave off nuclear bomb war before that time. Now, that's just in the big have nation of the United States. It would be the same in other countries. My friends, wherever you live, we are in a calamitous crisis. We are at the crossroads of humankind. We stand before a bifurcation of roads. We can take one or the other. The one is going to lead to human insanity and disaster, and the other is going to lead to the greatest era of discovery, the greatest era of rehabilitation, and the greatest era of pioneering that the world has ever known. Now, of course, in one sense, we have no choice, because choice has been removed from us so far as our own course of action has been concerned. Because our choice is individual, but collectively, we're not going to make the right choice. Now, you know that, and I know it. You know that collectively, the big nations of this world are not going to make the right choice to bring this world peace, even though individuals may make a choice in their own private lives to try to change their own environmental or social conditions and situations. Now, let's answer it this way. There is a cause for every effect. This booklet that I'm talking about, this Master Plan for Peace, is entitled by the same name as this radio program, The World Tomorrow. But the booklet talks about the wonderful world tomorrow that will be, what it will be like. The booklet by the title The World Tomorrow tells you exactly how mankind will finally live in a utopian era of peace, of world government, of, believe it or not, the unity of church and state, of, believe it or not, calendar reform, racial reform, religious reform, language reform, agrarian reform, social reform, economic reform, government reform. Everything totally changed. Now, that had better not sound too good to be true, because it's the only hope for mankind. It really is. And, of course, people who think about it know it. A lot of people don't think about it, but that's because they are simply terrified by conditions today. They find them so unsettling, and they find them so incredible and so unbelievable, they simply don't believe them. They simply don't even think about them because they have no solution. But world peace is possible. And I have before me a completely unique booklet that will come to you by return mail absolutely free of charge if you want it, that shows you the cause of world problems today and shows you the solution. Take any one cause, any one problem today, and find its cause. For instance, what about crime? Crime is skyrocketing everywhere. It's bigger and growing bigger yet. Crime increases faster than size of police force is one of the headlines I have clipped out right before me on the desk here in the radio studio. I've talked about crime, violence, juvenile delinquency, the use of drugs and increasing dope addiction, all that type of thing, the related evils, many times in the past on the World Tomorrow program, and I have shown there is a cause for it. What is the cause? People have a lot of guesses, opinions, notions, and ideas. They talk about slum areas until they look around and find that some of the so-called privileged kids are committing atrocious crimes, too. Sure, there are many so-called causes, but when you get down to the one root cause of all of it, it's just plain, dirty, rotten, stinking human nature. And human nature is revealed and laid bare as dirty, rotten, and stinking if you go to the source that describes human nature, that tells you what a man is, what he's made of, who made him, why he's been made, what are his attitudes, what makes him function the way he does, what makes him act and react, what makes you the way you are. There's a book about it, a book about human nature. It tells you what we are, and it's not very complimentary about mankind either. As a matter of fact, it says in one place in that book about human nature, don't you know that the spirit, meaning the attitude that is in us, lusts to envy? Don't you know that it's a lustful, driving desire from the time a little kid is still saying goo and sucking his thumb to envy somebody? That jealousy, selfishness, complete and total self-centeredness, carnality, resentment, greed, lust, covetousness, that these are the basic makeup of human nature? This book tells you about human nature. And it says the heart of humankind is deceitful above all things. For instance, a lot of you listen to this program and you sit around and deceive yourselves. Yes, you do, too. You sit around and kid yourselves. First of all, you like to kid yourselves that world conditions aren't the way they are. You like to deceive yourselves that reality isn't real. And you like to deceive yourselves about yourself. You like to kid yourself you're a little better, a little more magnanimous, a little more selfless and altruistic than you really are. It's real difficult for a person to look in the mirror and even admit they look the way they do, and with cosmetics and the multi-billion dollar industries to come along and help them convince themselves they don't look quite that bad, a lot of people aren't willing to admit the way they look. That's why there's a piece of furniture in Milady's dressing room which is called vanity. So what with the wigs, the dyes, the hair pullers, and those to paste on hair, and all of the distorters, and the pancake grease and makeup to cover up pimples and horrible sallow complexions and the like, and false teeth and bridges and all of the stuff you can put in a glass to soak them in overnight, people are not even admitting how they look, let alone how they are inside. But it's basic human nature, and you read about basic human nature in this book about human nature that tells you what it's really like down deep inside. Now, when you look at what human nature is really like down deep inside, and you admit this world is what its leaders have made it, and the leaders of this world are human, and each one of them, regardless as to his stature, regardless as to any abilities, is basically a human being with his human failings and faults, his weaknesses and abilities, his personal private problems, as well as those resting upon his shoulders of sometimes hundreds of millions of others. Then you begin to look at the trends in the world. First and most awesome, most brain-chilling and heart-quickening, the population explosion. Secondly, the growing disparity, which you include in this, between the mouths to feed and the food to feed them. And next, of course, stockpiling of hydrogen and atomic bombs. And next, perhaps second to that, is the growing number of nations sharing in those weapons. Next to that, the growing racial problems. And next to that, the growing political difficulties. And right next to that, perhaps the socioeconomic problems of today. And right next to that, you'd have to list some of the biggest ones of those socioeconomic problems, which are crime and divorce, dope addiction, chronic diseases. 7 out of 10 people in the United States of America, the so-called best-fed nation on the face of the earth, listen to this, 7 out of 10 over the age of 45, 7 out of 10 of both sexes suffer from one or another chronic disease or disability. 7 out of 10 over age 45. That's fact. Now, we can wave a magic wand in our eyes and our minds and think, oh, it isn't true, and live for the next couple of years, but it's kind of silly because the next couple of years are going to press in upon us and we can't change that. Now, I'm not trying to enlist a lot of candidates for suicide. I'm trying to get some of you to begin to think World peace is possible, but it's possible only in one way, and that is to, believe it or not, change human nature. We will never have utopia on this earth unless human nature is changed. Now you might answer, oh, but man can't change his own nature. True. Absolutely true. He can change himself a little bit outwardly. He can change his habits. He can even quit smoking if he gets scared enough. Or if you get filled with enough character and quit kidding yourself about all the reasons why you do it. People can change their habits. They can change their diet, change their weight, height. They can't change their height except by elevator shoes and the like, but they can change their shape and stature a little bit. They can change their appearance by artificial means. They can change certain habits and certain points of view and certain mental problems even. But they can't change their basic nature. But there is one who can, and there is a way to change human nature. It's not going to be changed automatically, but it's a good thing this master plan that is mapped out in this booklet that will come to you free of charge doesn't depend upon you believing it. This booklet is not to get you to join something. It's not to get you to sympathize with something. It doesn't mean anybody's got to start or join a movement. It doesn't mean marching on a world capital or a county capital. It doesn't mean joining anything. It doesn't mean protesting anything. It doesn't mean even believing in anything. This is going to happen whether you believe it or not. This is the news you will be reading in spite of mankind, in spite of every opinion to the contrary. Because every bit of this was predicted centuries ago and has been lying there, probably gathering dust in your own home, between the two covers of your Bible. Now, you can scoff at that if you wish. A lot of people are going to be really surprised to find out that the Bible says the exact opposite of what they thought. And here's the point. Few people know Christ was a news analyst. Few people know he talked about world government, and he put it in the context of these prevalent conditions today. He talked about wars, rumors of wars, drought, famine, earthquakes, disease epidemics, and pestilence. And he said at that precise time, a time unparalleled in human condition since man first trod this earth, there would have to come an intervention. Now, in the words of one of the most modern, one of the most chic, one of the most up-to-date news magazines available today, the U.S. News and World Report, unless a strong hand from somewhere, they put it, were to come, and mankind plainly just has had it. That was their own statement. I'll read that to you. It was in the December 6th, 1965 issue, as a matter of fact. And it was the appraisal of man's only hope. And it showed how that among officials, the prevailing view is gaining acceptance that tensions and world problems are becoming entirely too deep-seated to be solved, as they said, and I quote, except by a strong hand from someplace, end of quote. The Jesus Christ of your New Testament talked about that strong hand from someplace, and people have perverted and twisted that message or ignored it and forgot it. Now, isn't it amazing how few have really read, studied, or seen the message of Christ for themselves, and how most have thought about a little Lord away in a manger, overshadowed by his mother? A lot of people have rather superstitious, vague notions about dead saints, souls, angels, ancient paintings, stained glass windows, mournful chants of yesteryear, somebody holding somebody else's hand while he dies and sees a fictitious chariot in the sky, but he doesn't really know what all that has to do with today's dog-eat-dog business world, with this perilous time of world trauma. It's a little difficult for the average person. In modern terms, let's put it this way, to relate himself to such nutty notions. And they are nutty notions to most people. Now, teenagers can't see it, and I don't blame them. Teenagers aren't given any hope from anybody. They're not. They're just not. Religion says to teenagers, at least it seems to say, that what you have to do, and this is in the eyes now of teenagers, this is the way they relate it and equate it, this is the way they would put it. Yeah, they might say, religion's fine, all you old people. You've lived your lives. You've burnt the candle at both ends. Now you're about ready to die, so you want to sing soul-saving songs and clap your hands and march down the aisle and go to revival and get to heaven. Well, the kids might say that's all well and good for you old folks, but what about us young people? We want to have our fling at life, too. Many of them have written to say exactly that. And I deal with plenty of teenagers all the time, being over some school systems where we have teenagers growing up and college-age students and so on, and I know exactly how they feel. And know exactly how they think. They just need to realize there's a better world coming and that they're living in the most challenging age and the age of the greatest opportunities that have ever come before. And they need never to forget, too, that one of the greatest nations ever established on the face of this earth was established by a pack of people who walked across the river to establish a new country and to pioneer in new fields that had never before been opened. And that's going to happen again. Maybe not exactly like it, but there is a certain relationship between that ancient occurrence, which was the time when Israel went across a river into a promised land, and what's going to yet happen in the future. But isn't it true, don't you agree, that the average person has a tough time relating ideas about dead saints and Olympus this and that and stained glass windows and old ladies in gray felt hats and what's going on in the modern dog-eat-dog world of business, the world of crime, the world of cheating, the world of big powers, the world of wars, the world of Vietnam? But it just doesn't seem to occur to people to look into the Bible for themselves. They're willing to take others' opinions and standards. Think about it. A lot of people might have had a Bible-thumping father. And they grew to hate their dad. They resented their father. So they decided to resent the Bible and never think for a moment their father might not have characterized what is really in the Bible. A lot of people believe this or that doctrine or idea about the hereafter. They've accepted what other people have said. But maybe they've never gone to the source. A lot of people have very emotional ideas about the Bible and couldn't begin to quote chapter and verse for you. There are thousands and thousands of people who have less than two scriptures in their scriptural vocabulary, but who will tell you adamantly that they know this and they know that is true about the Bible. Isn't that an unbelievable statement? But it's true. 54% of professing church-going American Christian people can't tell you what the first four books of the New Testament are in proper order. They wouldn't know whether to find the book of Hezekiah and the New or the Old Testament, I say jokingly. They don't know whether or not the book of Jonah has any relationship to prophecy or just a story about the capacity of a whale. And you know, there was a sign that was given in that connection in the 12th chapter of the book of Matthew, which happens to be the first book of the New Testament, that has a great deal to do with one of the modern customs, which is being observed by millions of people around the world every single year, the custom named by an ancient pagan goddess. Yes, people don't seem to see anything in that, but you ought to investigate it sometime. It's called Astar. They used to pronounce it a little more like Astar over in ancient Babylon, where the idea of the ancient mother wife of Nimrod, Semiramis, was perpetuated down by that name. And how everything had to do, well, you know, people worshiped life, they worshiped the source of life, and they got all tangled up in their nutty notions in that dark and demented era about who God was and what God was, and they had pantheistic ideas of God in rocks and sticks and stones and growing things and dogs and cats, and like as not, they always, of course, knowing the source of life among human beings, would want to worship sex, anciently. Now, I mean, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but if you want to try to explain to your children just exactly why they've got bunnies and why they've got eggs at Easter season, well, be objective, be honest. You can't claim to have seen any bunnies hopping around in the manger when Christ was born. Nobody seems to know what on earth bunny rabbits and eggs have to do with Christ hanging on a cross. But they've got all that paraphernalia around that time of the year. I don't know what new hats and new suits and bunny rabbits and eggs have to do directly with the resurrection of Christ, yet here are millions of people who ostensibly, by their actions, are saying, we believe Christ walked out of his tomb, and we believe further that we may do this someday. My friends, of whatever faith, isn't that what you're saying? Isn't that exactly what people believe? That's exactly what Easter stands for. Doesn't the entire so-called Christian world say that it observes the first day of the week in commemoration of the resurrection of Christ? Of course, I can absolutely prove to you that he didn't rise on the first day of the week, and you can prove that to yourself by looking up one or two scriptures in your own Bible, as far as that's concerned. But it makes you wonder about history. But here are people observing a custom, a practice. Admittedly, millions sort of observe it. I mean, by that they might go to church when they're not really religious, and their pastors know that. And I think they're willing to overlook it. And a lot of people go trekking up to the top of a mountain, and maybe they don't feel especially religious. A lot of teenagers are there kind of wondering who else is there too, and I know. But, you know, here are millions of people who believe this or that doctrine or concept about life, about souls, and they're going through this outward formality of Easter. They don't really know what's behind Easter, where we got it, why it's observed then, exactly when did Christ rise, was it on a Sunday anyhow, and the Bible plainly said that he was going to be cut off in the middle of a week, and you can't possibly. Have you got a child that's about 6 or 7? Has he taken in beginning Mass yet? Block out a week in little squares and ask him to start from Friday sunset and count 3 days and 3 nights and see where he ends up. Now, any little kid is going to end up differently than some ancient people did way back there when they decided to try to sandwich, and I'll never know how they tried to do that. 3 days and 3 nights in between a Friday sunset and an Easter Sunday morning. You can't do it. Nobody ever could, but of course it seemingly never just occurs to us to look into it to find out. But here's the point. Here is one of the major customs of the Christian world involving the resurrection. What is a resurrection? Well, it's the raising of dead bodies to bring them back to life. But wait a minute. If people are in heaven in souls, why would you want to put them back in a dirty old corrupt body? What if somebody died of cancer and he either went to heaven or got preached into heaven or whatever happens? People have all kinds of ideas about that. Now along comes the resurrection. Now we have to admit, whether you know the Bible or not, that the resurrection is in the Bible, all right. Daniel 12, John 5, Acts 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Acts 26, Acts 28, 1 Corinthians 15, Revelation 2, 26 and 3, 21, 1 Thessalonians 4, on and on I could go. The entire 15th chapter of 1 Corinthians is called the resurrection chapter. The whole chapter is talking about it. You've got to admit that. The Bible does talk about a resurrection, all right, but here's the point. If what people think is true about souls and spirits and saints and heaven and hell, then how on earth, it's a good question, how on earth could you possibly take a soul out of heaven who's been there all these years? Now listen, maybe this soul died as a baby. I mean, this person died as a baby, whatever the story is, and the soul went to heaven. Most people think babies should, anyhow. And now the soul has been maturing up there, if souls mature, maybe this baby died back during the days of Drake and Frobisher. Now it's about 400 years old. Now, the soul, with all that maturity, is put back in a little tiny baby's body and starts all over again. I don't get it. What about mothers, if they're saved and their babies didn't get saved? Do the mothers hear the shrieks of the babies in hell? What about a family, and they're in China? The missionary has a flat tire, and the elderly man dies before the missionary gets there, and the fella goes to hell as a result of this. Is that right? What about if somebody is in hell and a resurrection occurs? Is the soul put back into the body when the soul has been in hell and he gets another chance? What about somebody who's buried at sea and eaten by a shark, and you eat the shark's liver and he becomes a part of you? What then? What if somebody is burnt and the ashes scattered down a river and they're cremated? They go up in smoke. Then how do they get the body back? You need to write for this booklet on resurrection. The questions about the resurrection. There are a lot of questions that ought to be answered, and also the one on the immortality of the soul. Is the soul immortal? Write for the one on the resurrection, the one on the soul, in this booklet that I'm in on the wonderful world tomorrow. What will it be like? It's free of charge, no price for these booklets. We'll send them to you by return mail without any obligation on your part at all. No cost if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember to tell us the call letters of your station. These booklets are free of charge. The one on the soul, on the resurrection, and the one by the title of this program, The World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. The address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.